This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
I'm Tom Wilmer, your host and the voice of Balarama, an Indian elephant in Bhaskar Krishnamurthy's award-winning children's book, Balarama's Story, An Elephant's Journey. Elephants have forever been an intrinsic element in Indian mythology and folklore. Balarama's story is the biography of an elephant that was uprooted from his natural home in the forest and subsequently attained mythic status as a royal elephant in India's Dasara festival. The book, Balarama's Story, is included in school curriculums in India, the United States, and the United Kingdom. Come along and meet Balarama. Chapter 1. How Elephants Came to Earth. One chilly morning in the Nagarhole forest, baby Balarama followed his aunt out of their watering hole. Auntie Ani was headed for their favorite spot in the cool waters of the Kabini. The stream gurgled merrily, and the ripples of gold and silver danced as they caught the sunbeam. Baby Balarama the elephant watched a lone osprey flit about, dipping into the water and posing on the wooden stumps as he shuffled along to keep up with Auntie Ani. The other babies, Arjuna, Bhima, Nakula, and Mohini, were already there. Balarama, the naughtiest one of all, was always last. When they reached the water's edge, Auntie said, "Come here, little ones." Balarama fell into the water, raising his trunk and trumpeting joyfully as he felt the first tinge of the cold water on his back. He turned back as Auntie said again, "Come here, everyone. I'm going to tell you a story." Balarama forgot about playing in the water, and he rushed to nuzzle Auntie Ani. "Do you know how we elephants came to be here on the earth?" Balarama was surprised. "Earth? I know we are here, Auntie, in Nagarhole, by the Kabini. What are you saying?" Auntie Ani smiled and said, "A long time ago, longer than even we elephants can remember, gods roamed the earth. Just like us, we were all very happy. We already lived in heaven. One day, human beings, men and women, suddenly arrived," Auntie went on, "and everything went wrong. The gods said, 'We are going to another world, a new heaven. These humans are dangerous. Why don't you come too?' The elephant said, 'Oh, no. You go on ahead. We are big. We are mighty and powerful. What can these tiny humans do? They have no tusks, no trunk even.' The elephants laughed. The earth was beautiful and big. The sky, the jungle, the river, the grassland, and the mountains. We could share it with the humans, the elephants thought, and wave the gods off on their journey to their new heaven. All the elephants stayed back, except one, the Aravata. A very odd-looking elephant he was, with 5 trunks and 10 tusks. He decided to go with the gods," Auntie said. But Balarama, who tried to imagine the Aravata, began to laugh. He forgot all about the wicked humans, who were tiny but very, very scary. Chapter 2, at Auntie Annie's School. When I was little, like you are now, Balarama, I followed my Amma everywhere, began Auntie Annie. Balarama, intent on finding the coziest spot under Auntie's left leg to nuzzle, quit nudging about in great surprise. "You are Auntie?" he cried. "You had an Amma? And you were once little, too, like me?" Auntie Annie laughed. "Yes, Balarama, one day you will be big, bigger than me, and you will have long tusks, and everyone will stop and stare when you go stomping by," she said. "Like Appa?" Balarama squealed excitedly. "Oh, I can't wait to be big and have fine tusks." He rushed into the water, and drawing deep with his trunk, he sprayed himself with a baby jumbo-sized shower. And then he found a muddy spot in a puddle, and he sat down and began to daydream. He was strutting up to the stream where his friends waited at their favorite hangout, Kakanakote, across the Kabini. Polka the leopard was sliding by and stopped to stare. Heyday the cobra stopped slithering and raised his hood, but Balarama the mighty jumbo was only after one thing, to catch the eye of Mohini, who had strayed from her herd and was hiding behind the bamboo clump, pretending to ignore him. "Come, Balarama!" Auntie Annie's voice boomed. Splat went his dream as he tried to stand up and he fell down on his tail. He thought he heard someone crying out, "Ouch, ouch, ouch," and then he realized it was his own voice. He ran to Auntie Annie as fast as his little legs could carry him. He was only 4 and had just left his mother's side. He no longer tripped on his own trunk, and he had become very clever at using it to nibble at plants and drink long and deep at the river. Not like his cousin Arjuna, who was just 6 months old and waddled more than he walked, and often put his food into his eye and squealed in pain. Balarama laughed at Arjuna's little accidents. He forgot his own tangles with the trunk when he had been tiny like Arjuna. "Balarama!" His aunt sounded really angry now, and he went, remembering Auntie Annie's enormous trunk landing on his rear the other day when he had been caught pulling little Mohini's tail. Really, Balarama was the naughtiest little elephant to be born in the Nagarajole in a long, long time. Well, not since Auntie Annie had been a little girl, but that's a story for another day. Chapter 3, Fun in the Forest. Auntie Annie was the queen of the herd. Everybody obeyed her. When she commanded, "Move," everybody moved. She was the leader, and all other auntie elephants followed with their babies. She kept the elephants big and tiny safe. The jungle was a scary place for a little guy like Balarama. Auntie Annie knew when Huli Tiger was skulking in the bushes, hoping Balarama or Baby Arjuna would get tired of marching and stop. Baby elephants made a delicious meal for Huli. Sometimes a very hungry Huli would even jump on Auntie Annie herself. But most of the time, Auntie Annie and the other grown-ups let the boys and girls play. The daily march in the jungle was fun. Balarama and friends would dash about hither and thither, sniffing that little flower and worrying that little bug crunching into the tasty grass there, and they played hide and seek. Auntie Annie, always watchful, let them go ahead and play, like she had eyes behind her ears. But she never let them stray beyond the edge of an invisible circle. She knew the little ones got tired very quickly, and marching over 15 kilometers of forest every day was hard enough for grown-ups. She could rest a while as the children played, explored the nooks and crannies, and then napped, as their tired little eyelids drooped shut and they floated away into sleepy land. It was a very hot day in May, and Auntie could use a nap, too. When they were older, Auntie said, Balarama and Arjuna would not be afraid of the tiger or the leopard, for they left the big elephants alone. But why are they here? Balarama asked. He really disliked being afraid of anything or anyone. Why, Balarama, the jungle is their home, too. We must share it with everyone. The tigers, the deer, the sambar. See that monitor lizard basking in the sun on that rock over there? All of a sudden, zoom, said Balarama, and Auntie turned to look at him, and she laughed softly, for he had fallen fast asleep, his little trunk curled up on his knees. A while later, Balarama felt a gentle nudge on his neck, and he mumbled sleepily, Stop, Mohini, you're tickling me. And then a little louder, Hey, let me sleep. I'll tell Auntie on you. But his eyes popped open suddenly when he heard Auntie's voice. Wake up, Balarama. We have to leave now. Come on. You don't want to be left behind. I saw that dole hiding in the horse nettle shrub behind the cotton tree in the beechwood. He's a nasty piece of work. Balarama bounded up at great speed, and he ran to join the other kids who were waiting with their moms and aunties. Chapter 4. Big Boy Balarama. 4 years later, Balarama stood on the banks of the Kabini where the water was shallow. He could see the fish darting about without a care in the world. This meant the crocodiles were not lurking close by. Who would want to have a leg locked in the powerful jaws of a hungry crocodile? Balarama thought that now would be a good time to cross over to the Kakanakote side and hang out with his friends, Bhima, Nakula, and Rama, who preferred to go stomping across the river from their home in the Nagarajole. Now, he thought, was a good time. He watched Auntie Annie and his mother herding the babies and toddlers to a safe spot on the river for them to bathe in and play. He laughed as the little ones tumbled about and tripped on their trunks, and the really naughty fellow who pulled the tail of his buddy, who yelped in pain. That was him 4 years ago. Mohini was there, too. One day, she was going to be the matriarch, just like Auntie Annie, who had taught him everything he knew about being a good elephant. When the time came, Balarama would be starting a herd of his own with Mohini, and they would have many little elephant babies together. That's what elephants had been doing forever. For 5.5 million years, elephants had been here on the beautiful earth since the beginning of time. Balarama and the other elephants living in the Nagarajole were the Asian elephants, and their closest relatives were the African elephant. Another close relative was the mammoth, which had become extinct 10,000 years ago. When Auntie Annie told him that 50 million years ago, their kind were only about the size of pigs, Balarama couldn't believe her, but of course it was true. Auntie told him about Ganesha. You know, she said, you know he's a god. He has a trunk and tusks just like us, only one of his trunks is broken. Once, Moon was looking down from the sky, and he saw Ganesha, fat and round, passing by. He was riding a tiny mouse. Moon began to laugh. He laughed till his tummy hurt. And when he finally stopped, he saw Ganesha was very angry. Moon saw his angry face and he was frightened. Before he could begin to say sorry, Ganesha broke his tusk off and flung it at Moon. And then he said, "Ho, you think I'm funny? Watch, you shall become dark, and you will stop glowing, and you will never be seen by anyone." Now everyone became worried. If the moon became invisible, there would be chaos everywhere. "Be merciful, Ganesha," they pleaded, but Ganesha could not take back his curse. So he thought a bit, and he said, "From now on, you will wax and wane alternately every 15 days. You will be seen as the new moon, half moon, and full moon, and there will also be a moonless night." Balarama loved this story very much, and he often played Ganesha all by himself when he thought no one was looking. When he looked at the moon, which glowed softly on full moon nights, and then began to grow smaller, he would laugh and say, "Hey, moon, I know all about you." Balarama had heard that 4 mighty elephants hold the earth in place. They were given this task by the gods Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Virupachka stood at the east, bearing the weight of the earth on his back. Sometimes, when he grew tired, he would shake his head vigorously to ease the tense muscles in his neck. And when he did that, the earth would shake, rattle, and rumble. We call them earthquakes. An elephant called Mahapadma is in the south, and the western side of the earth is supported by Somanasa. In the north is the elephant called Bhadra. Elephants are very important, Balarama thought. If there were no elephants, the earth would just fall down. Chapter 5. All About Humans and Kata. One day, Auntie Annie told Balarama and the other boys about war. "War," she said, "is a terrible thing. Man kills man, and in a war, thousands of them are killed. Long ago, there was an emperor, Ashoka, who had 700 elephants in his army. They went into the battlefield, and the human beings rode them, and they killed each other. Elephants and horses died too." Balarama didn't understand. How did elephants land up on the battlefield? And what were these creatures, horses? He thought elephants lived here in the forest by themselves. As for humans, well, he was not quite sure. He hadn't even seen one, though Alti told him there were kind humans and there were mean, cruel humans too. "Child," said Auntie Annie, "it's time I told you about Kata." She sounded extremely sad, and he could barely hear her. Balarama grew alarmed. He had never seen Auntie like this, eyes drooping, her face long, her whole body stooped sadly. Sniffing loudly, Auntie gathered Balarama, Rama, Nakula, and Bhima close, and when they were all huddled together close to her, she began, "Boys, listen carefully. Now you are all old enough to know. You must all promise not to stray far from home or go anywhere alone, and never, ever go to the edge of the forest where the big gates are. On the other side of those gates, that's where the humans live. These humans, they want us. They want you, boys, because you have tusks. They take away young elephants and they're never heard of again, Auntie said. Balarama was terrified now. So were his friends. They huddled closer together and they stayed close to Auntie. Why would humans want our tusks? Balarama thought, and he jumped out of his skin when Nakula said, My big brother, Ramisha, he says he saw our uncle, Govinda, lying on the grass by the sugarcane fields. I think he was dead, and his tusks were gone. Bhima, his voice quivering, said, When Gunda told me that humans come and take away elephants and we never hear of them again, I thought my big brother was joking and trying to scare me. And now Auntie tells us this. The gang fell silent, and nobody wanted to go out across the Kabini to go stomping in Kakanakote. They would just stay home, close to Auntie and their mommies. After a while, the four young ones got tired of not doing anything, but they were too nervous to play hide-and-seek, and splashing about in the water didn't seem fun at all today. But they badly needed cheering up. Suddenly, Balarama perked up, remembering something. Auntie, asked Balarama, what is Kaeda? You said you would tell us about Kaeda. Come, darlings, Auntie said, I will tell you about Kaeda. Once you know, you will learn to be very, very careful, and you'll help each other, won't you? Balarama and his friends nodded vigorously, their young trunks touching the ground and their ears flapping noisily. They sat down around Auntie, nuzzling her and feeling safe. Children, when you go near the edge of the forest, where the humans often come with guns and big trucks, you hide. You just turn around and very, very quietly walk back home. Never let them see you, Auntie said. I know you've never seen a human, and you think he is too small to do anything to us, but they are clever and cunning, and there are way too many of them, Auntie went on. They will lay traps for you. And if you see sugar cane and grass in the forest, and it's not standing in the fields beyond, don't get greedy and run to it. The wily humans dig a hole in the ground, and they cover it with grass and cane. Ooh, and when we go there, the grass will give way, and we will fall into the pit? That's scary, Auntie, said Balarama, shivering so much that he thought everyone could hear his bones rattling. Of course, no one noticed, because they could only hear their own bones rattling, as scary thoughts raced through their little minds. How horrible to be taken out of the forest and to never see Auntie again or their friends. Chapter 6. They Come for Balarama. It was a fine day in the Nagaraholi forest. The Kabini flowed with a merry gurgle, and it caught the sun's rays in twinkling flecks of gold and silver. The cormorants and storks stood in the water, occasionally dipping their beaks in the river to grab a fish. Kingfishers swooped in out of nowhere and flew off with a bite. Woodpeckers kept up their knocking on the teak trees, and deer flitted about behind the bushes. Bure, the son of old Hughley, who had been killed by hunters many moons ago, skulked about, wondering if he ought to go for the kill or wait another day to lunch on a deer. The baby elephants, under the care of Chicky Ani, were learning to stand in the water without falling down on their tail. One of them had his trunk caught under another baby, and there was laughter and wailing and some complaining. Balarama strode past them, ignoring the admiring looks. He began to amble with an extra swagger, shamelessly showing off his long trunk and his smart pair of tusks that grew long and awesome. Chicky Ani came up behind him, and he felt a sharp nudge on his huge, imposing, in his opinion, behind. "Ouch!" he cried in sudden pain, wondering which elephant had dared to do this. "Get moving, young man," Chikiani growled, and Balarama obeyed hastily. He liked Chikiani a lot. She was only a few years older than him. When Auntie Ani, who had raised him and taught him everything he knew, died, she had taken over the herd. How he missed Auntie Ani! She had suddenly taken ill and had been in great pain for many days. Everyone had gathered close, and they never left her side. She had become wan and thin. When Balarama went to nuzzle her, she barely opened her eyes, and she had mumbled his name weakly. Nakula, Bhima, and Rama, too, had been unable to make her feel better. Then all the grown-ups came and made a great big circle around her. They talked and told stories and remembered the days when they were babies. There had been aunties and mommies to take care of them and love them. Sometimes they were quiet, not saying a word, as tears streamed down their trunks. After 9 days, Auntie Ani heaved a last slow, deep sigh, and she opened her eyes widely and smiled. And then she was gone, the smile frozen on her dear old face. Everyone had begun to cry, softly at first, and then a deep rumble shook the forest for miles around as all the elephants wept, and they locked their trunks with each other and fell on Auntie Ani, and they stroked her. For 3 days and three nights, the elephants mourned. Finally, they began digging the earth around her, and soon a shallow grave was made. Auntie Ani looked very peaceful, lying in her new bed. Balarama had joined all the other elephants in bringing the leaves and twigs and even fruit to cover her body. And then they had all left to slowly begin their life without Auntie Ani. Balarama had reached his spot, smiling at the memories of Auntie Ani and the little ones he had just passed, wallowing in the muddy puddles of the Kabini, where there was a fresh sprig of tender bamboo for him to munch on. "Should I accept Nakula's dare and later in the evening after sunset try and grab a few sticks of sugar cane across the Himavati?" he had asked himself. He had all day to think about it, and he began stomping about looking for something to do. When Heyday the cobra suddenly raised his head and his hood flared wide under the silver oak, Balarama realized there was something wrong. Heyday hissed loudly and fell to the ground and began slithering away. Balarama watched, mesmerized, and trying to gauge what danger was visiting the forest on this beautiful day. He was thinking he ought to make for the gooseberry and the horse nettle shrubs behind the bamboo clumps, and as he turned, his trunk raised and his ears fanning slowly, he felt a sharp pain shoot up his left hip. He knew he was not going to make it. "A thorn! Oh, Ganesha, what is happening?" Balarama mumbled before his legs folded up under him and he fell on the grass with a great thud that could be heard a mile away. "There is a handsome one," he heard a voice. It was humans. The dreaded humans were here in his spot, and he was down, slipping into a strange new kind of sleep. "A worthy successor to Drona," the human was saying. "Drona? That sounds familiar. Who? Where had he heard that word?" It was the last question on Balarama's mind as he slipped into a dreamless sleep. Later, Balarama opened his eyes slowly. He felt groggy. "I want a drink of water and a splash in the Himavati," he mumbled. His words came out sounding like a low grunt. He got up. Well, actually, he tried to get up, wondering why he was lying down like he was sick in the first place. But he couldn't move his legs at all. In great panic, he raised his trunk and let out a long, agonizing trumpet. Balarama's rang out so loud that he was sure it could be heard in the watering hole of the Kabini. Alas, he would never know. As the echo of his trumpeting subsided, he heard voices again. "He's waking up," someone was saying. Balarama tried to turn his head to see where the voice was coming from. Of course, he could not turn his head. There was a rope cutting into the folds of his neck, and the pain was unbearable. He whimpered and flapped his ears. He could only move his right ear. There were humans. He knew they were humans, though he'd never really set eyes on all around him, prodding him, touching him, and talking loudly as if he wasn't even there. As Balarama started to feel the ground firmly under his 4 feet, and he found that he was not falling, he turned his head from left to right, and he found he could. He also saw these strange creatures, a dozen of them at least. They were standing on 2 legs. With their 4 legs, they were tugging at the ropes that bound him. They had no trunks, and they had no ears, apparently, and definitely no tail. Balarama was hearing strange new sounds and words, and strangely, he just knew he was going to hear more of them from now on as Balarama felt himself move. He was being lifted. His feet no longer touched the ground. So this is how Jiru, that annoying leopard cub, must have felt, Balarama thought. He had seen Uncle Ramesha wrap his gigantic trunk around him and fling him into the bamboo clump 300 meters away. He looked down and gulped, as he had never had an aerial view of his home. He was on level with the top of the jackfruit tree, and he could feel the foliage brush against his ear. He was suspended midair, flying like the sharp-eyed Geduga the eagle. His head was spinning, and he thought it was the forest spiraling down. But before he could get used to it, he felt himself dropping down again. He hated what was happening to him, all trussed up, being pulled up, dragged down, and these noisy humans making him do all this. He was standing, finally, on something. His feet were bound together, and something slammed shut. His trunk almost touched something that was cold and hard. He was in a cage, but he had learned the names of what was happening to him much later. The cage was drawn by a truck, and soon it started moving. Balarama watched as the forest whizzed by. He began to whimper softly, and tears streamed down his eyes. The forest receded into the distance, and he could no longer hear the Himavati rippling merrily by. He thought he had glimpsed Buri the tiger on one of the teak trees, watching him being taken away. Chapter 7. Balarama is Taken. Balarama opened his eyes slowly. He felt real groggy. "I want a drink of water and a splash in the Himavati," he mumbled, but his words came out sounding like a low grunt. He got up. Well, no, actually, he tried to get up, wondering why he was lying down in the first place like he was sick. But he could not move his legs at all. In great panic, he raised his trunk and let out a loud, agonizing trumpet. Balarama's trump rang out so loud that he was sure it could be heard in the watering hole at Kabini. Alas, he would never know. As the echo of his trumpeting subsided, he heard voices again. "He's waking up," someone was saying. Balarama tried to turn his head to where the voice was coming from. Of course, he couldn't turn his head. There was a rope cutting into the folds of his neck, and the pain was unbearable. He whimpered and flapped his ears, but he could only move his right ear. There were humans. He knew they were humans. They were prodding him, touching him, and talking loudly as if he wasn't even there. As Balarama felt the ground firmly under his 4 feet, he found that he was not falling, and he found that he could turn his head from left to right. He also saw these strange creatures, a dozen of them at least, standing on two legs. With their forelegs, they were tugging at the ropes that bound him. They had no trunks, and they had no ears, apparently, and definitely no tail. Balarama was hearing strange new sounds, words, and strangely he knew he was going to hear more of them from now on. Balarama felt himself move. He was being lifted. His feet no longer touched the ground. Balarama thought, so this is how Chiru, that annoying leopard, must have felt. He had seen Uncle Ramesha wrap his gigantic trunk around Chiru and fling him into the bamboo clump 300 meters away. He looked down and gulped, as he had never had an aerial view of his home. He was on level with the top of the jackfruit trees, and he could feel the foliage brush against his ear. He was suspended in midair, flying like the sharp-eyed Gaduga the eagle. His head was spinning, and he thought it was the forest spiraling around. But before he could get used to it, he felt himself dropping down again. He hated what was happening to him, all trussed up, being pulled up, dragged down, and these noisy humans making him do all this. Finally, he was standing on something. His feet were bound together, and something slammed shut. His trunk almost touched something cold and hard. He was in a cage, but he'd learn the names of what was happening to him much later. The cage was drawn by a truck, and soon it started moving. Balarama watched as the forest whizzed by, and he began to whimper softly. His tears streamed down his eyes. The forest receded into the distance, and he could no longer hear the Himavathi rippling merrily by. He thought he glimpsed Burre the tiger on one of the teak trees, watching him being taken away. Chapter 8, Balarama's Despair and a New Friendship. 1 week later, Balarama stood under the giant silver oak, still as a rock. Auntie Ani would have been pleased, he thought. Not that he could have moved even if he wanted to. His legs were bound in chains that snaked up from a stout iron post a few dozen feet away. I wish I were dead, Balarama thought, as tears welled up in his eyes and flowed down his drooping trunk. Was he being missed back home? Was Mohini looking for him desperately? Had Burre the tiger told the herd? What were Arjuna, Bhima, and Nakula and Rama doing? Did they miss him? In the 7 days since he had been here at the elephant camp, Balarama had cried a lot, more than he had in all his life. He was also very angry. On the first morning, Balarama slowly began to understand. He was never going to see his home or his friends again. He strained at the chains and the ropes that were binding him, and when he could not move as he wished, he trumpeted in great agony. His triumph was blood-curdling, and every beast in the Nagarhole and the Kakanakote would have frozen in its tracks, after which they would have run very fast, as far away as they could. The humans here, though, were unimpressed. When he trumpeted, all he felt was a sudden sharp jab in his rear or in the folds of his neck. his famed grrrr would then end in a pathetic whimper. A mound of grass and sugarcane was within grabbing distance of his trunk, but he had no appetite. The human, who was called Sinapa, came to him every morning and coaxed him to eat. "Balaramu, please eat. Here, I brought you ragi bowls. They're good for you," Sinapa would say. He would gently stroke his trunk, and fetching water in giant drums, which had stout pipes, he would spray Balarama with the cool waters of the Kabini. Balarama loved the feel of the water, and his tempers would cool a bit. But he would remember how he would walk himself to the riverside when he felt like it, and he became sad, kicking himself mentally for beginning to like Sinapa. When he remembered to be mad, Balarama would go all stiff and, flicking his tail, raise his trunk and pretend to nuzzle Sinapa. But when Sinapa leaned close, he would dig sharply with his tusk. But Sinapa was wily. "Don't, Balarama. I have tamed many elephants like you, and you will soon meet Drona," he said kindly while pulling the chains just a teensy bit tighter in an eight around his legs. Every morning he would wake and see his chains, the grass, and Sinapa, and he'd remember where he was. What was he to do? Why had he been brought here? And what about Drona? There was no one to talk to, and the birds chirping in the trees around his new home grated on his ears. He hated that they could come and go as they pleased. He soon stopped speaking, or even uttering a word, and he began to forget the sound of his own voice. Sinapa had a small prod, which he always carried with him, tucked in the towel around his waist, and he knew how to use it, and that made Balarama very nervous. Sinapa had often used the prod to dig him sharply in the neck or behind the ears, whenever he suspected Balarama was going to smite him with his tusk. And Sinapa frustrated every attempt by Balarama to escape. Balarama finally realized it was a game, and he would always lose. Sinapa was kind, really, and he loved Balarama very much. But he had a job to do to teach Balarama many things, like how to be an elephant in the city, bend and bow, and raise his trunk to throw flowers at the Shaman Dushuari, march with other elephants, painted and decorated, from the royal palace to Bani Montop in Mysore. "This is the Jambu Savari, Balarama," Sinapa explained. Balarama had plenty of time to think now, and he worked it all out. "I won't be mean to Sinapa," he thought. One morning, Sinapa came to the clearing in the clump that was Balarama's home and was very surprised. "Hooray!" he said, as Balarama bounded up and pulled Sinapa with his trunk and gently swung him up and down and finally placed him delicately on his back. Sinapa laughed and danced a jig on Balarama's back and sang, "Chal, chal, chal, Mirasati, O Mirahati," which Balarama learned later was a song in a movie about four elephants and their human. From then on, Balarama and Sinapa were inseparable. Chapter 9. Meeting Drona and Arjuna. Sinapa taught him everything. At Sinapa's command, he stood, sat, he bent and knelt and ran, trotted or just kept beat with the music. Kayo Sri Gauri, which was the state anthem of Royal Mysore, always made him dance a tap-tap with his right front leg, and his head would shake in rhythm with the beat. It always brought tears to his eyes, and Sinapa, too, would go all teary-eyed just looking at him. At last, it was time for Balarama to meet other elephants who lived with the humans. "Come, my friend," Sinapa said to Balarama one morning, "we are going to meet Drona." Balarama showered, and Sinapa painted three white lines on his forehead and placed a red dot of kumkum in the middle. "Now you look dandy," he said, and clambered onto Balarama's back. They walked for about an hour and soon came to Dubare, where there were a few humans about, and some of them hailed Sinapa. "Hey, look who's here." "So is he ready?" one of them asked. "Yes, Anaya, we are ready," replied Sinapa, patting Balarama on his head. Nudged by Sinapa, Balarama strode in through the wide gateway, whose logged gates were wide open. He slowly raised his head and looked around. His eyes widened in wonder at what he saw. There were seven elephants, all with their right leg in chains, standing in a circle, staring at this newcomer. A human sat on three of them, while the other four were being nuzzled, stroked, and gently spoken to. Sinapa nudged Balarama and guided him to a vacant spot in the circle of elephants. Balarama went nervously and stood in his spot and then turned to look at his neighbor on the left. He looked familiar. He knew that pink patch of freckles on the right ear. "Arjuna," he exclaimed. "How? What happened? You too?" He was blubbering, and soon Arjuna too was trumpeting excitedly and making elephant noises of relief and comfort. Arjuna had been taken from his own stomping ground on the same day, and he had been kept not far from where Balarama had been chained. His human was Anaya. Chapter 10, Dasara Drill. "Arjuna," Balarama began, wanting to know how he had been caught. But Sinapa nudged him sharply with his prod. He winced and withdrew to his spot in the circle and watched Arjuna do the same as his mahout prodded him. That's what Sinapa and Anaya were called. Now the circle of elephants was complete. All the mahouts mounted their elephants, and everyone except Balarama and Arjuna seemed to know exactly what to do. The oldest one, who was also the biggest, stepped forward into the circle at the command of his mahout. "Drona, kneel," said his mahout, Basavaraju. So this was Drona, whose legend was told to all young elephants by Auntie Ani. His strength and his powerful trump that would send tremors across the forest. "Drona, kneel," he said to his mahout, Basavaraju. So this was Drona, whose legend was told to all young elephants by Auntie Ani. His strength and his powerful trumpet that could send tremors across the forest, his majestic gait, his fearsome anger, and the ease with which he had once wrapped his trunk around Huli and flung him 200 meters away into the Kabini. Balarama just stared at him, wide-eyed. He was awed. Drona was kneeling. He raised his trunk and shook his head until the big bell tied round his neck tinkled merrily. As Balarama watched, he became very sad and angry. Humans were vile. Why didn't they just leave elephants alone? Balarama felt a sharp tap on his head, and he came back to the present. The other elephants were kneeling too, and their bells were ringing. Only Arjuna and Balarama were standing. Sanapa spoke softly. "Kneel, Balarama, you can do it." And with a deep, sad sigh, Balarama knelt and watched Arjuna do the same. He would never understand all this. Was he taken from his home to be a performing elephant for humans? "Kneel, stand, sit. Kneel, stand, sit." At noon, their first lesson ended, and the elephants were taken away to rest and have a meal. And he finally got a chance to speak with Arjuna. "I was going to see Leela," Arjuna said, his eyes brimming with tears, and Balarama was silent, thinking of his own Mohini. "I was racing along very excited, for Leela had made their secret sign, touching her trunk to her right ear. That meant that Leela would wait at their special place in the bamboo clump. When Arjuna tripped over a pile of bamboo and sugar cane, it gave way, and he found himself falling down. He was frantic. He tried to break his fall, but only slipped further down into a hole. It was the trap that Auntie Annie had warned them about when they had been little. Balarama and Arjuna stood close, nuzzling each other. This was the only comforting link they had with their past. Chapter 11, March to Mysore. 3 months later, Balarama and Arjuna graduated, and they were in great awe of Drona. He spoke little and ignored all the humans around him, except Basavaraju. They were very fond of each other, and Basavaraju often said only he could predict Drona's mood. But Drona always obeyed Basavaraju without a fuss. And Drona was kind to Balarama and Arjuna. He patiently repeated the drills so they could watch and learn. Soon it would be Dasara in the royal city of Mysore, and the final day of the Jambu Savari, the march from the palace to the Bani Mantap. Balarama wasn't sure what Dasara was. He thought it must be some kind of grand show, where he would have to do all the kneeling, bending, and dancing in a few steps in front of important humans. When Dasara festival, which means 10-day festival, was 3 months away, the elephants in Dubare were taken to Mysore. They walked a long way through villages. People gathered on the wayside, and some gave them coconuts, bananas, and cane. They offered arati and applied kumkum on their foreheads. Balarama watched the senior elephants and Drona. Like them, he accepted the offerings and placed his trunk on the human's head. Sometimes they even held out baby humans, and Balarama would pat them affectionately and then walk on. After walking for a day, they stopped in a wooded spot near Hunsur. It looked like the jungle, but there were strange noises through the night. It was, Balarama learned later, the hum of vehicles passing by on roads. The following morning, the elephants were herded into trucks, like the one he had been brought in from the jungle the day he had been caught. They were driven through the roads, and on which hundreds of trucks, some small and some really tiny, with just two wheels, were whizzing by in both directions. They were honking and humans were shouting at each other. And when the trucks reached the entrance to Mysore City, Balarama saw a policeman standing in the middle waving his arms. The elephant's caravan stopped behind a procession of other vehicles, and when the policeman waved them on, they moved on. Soon they were brought to the royal stables, and the elephants trundled out of their trucks. This was going to be their home for the next 3 months. Balarama was very nervous, and he hated the noise and bustle of the city. It was crawling with humans, and they were a noisy lot. There were some who barked instructions, and others who ran to obey the orders. Sinapa and the other mahouts were very respectful when officers came to inspect the elephants. 6 new elephants from another camp had now joined the Dubare friends. Drona had told Balarama and Arjuna that they must be very attentive. Watch and learn, he told them. The humans, who appeared to be really important, came each morning to see how the elephants were doing. The mahouts reported to them, and they would not come close to the elephants, but watched from a safe distance. Just as well, said Balarama to Arjuna. I would like to dig my tusk into their pot bellies and trample them. They are annoying. A fortnight later, the elephants had all settled down to their new routine, and Balarama was not apprehensive anymore. One morning, Sinapa took him out to the grounds, where he found the other elephants standing in a row with their mahouts beside them. When Balarama joined the others, Drona was brought forward. The others, including the new elephants, were made to stand behind Drona in twos. Govinda, one of the new elephants, stood right behind Drona. Balarama found to his relief that he was together with Arjuna, and they were the last pair of elephants in the procession. They waited with the mahouts on their backs. The musical band arrived with drums, flute, trumpet, and bugles, and the bandsmen stood in two neat little rows close by. When the conductor waved his baton, they began playing. Balarama was enchanted. This was the first time he heard a band playing music, and he found it very soothing, and he was soon tapping his foot and nodding appreciatively, and the other elephants were doing the same. When the song ended, the mahouts patted their elephants, and Balarama heard Sinapa, who had hummed along, say, "Very good, Balarama, I am so proud." The band struck up another song, and this time Drona was goaded forward. Govinda followed behind, and the elephant pairs went after him. Balarama and Arjuna fell in step and marched, bringing up the rear of the procession. After circling the ground several times, the elephants returned to their stables. Their first day at training was over. Balarama and Arjuna were introduced to a new diet. They were given horse gram, plenty of jaggery, and ragi balls. "Eat up, Balarama. You will need all the energy for the big day." As the days passed, the elephants practiced keeping time with the music, walking in line and in tandem. Balarama soon learned that Drona was the most important elephant. He would be festively caparisoned, his trunk and forehead painted in bright colors and designs. More importantly, he would be carrying Devi Shamandeshwari, the goddess of Mysore, on his majestic back. The Shamandeshwari idol would be seated in a golden ambari that weighed 800 kilos. A long time ago, the Maharaja of Mysore would be seated in the ambari, which belonged to the royal house of the Wadiyars. There would be a procession on the last day of Dasara, the Vijaya Dashami. It would start from the palace and end at the Bani Mountain. This was the great Jambu Safari. All the jumbos, that was him and all the elephants, they would walk in procession to the Bani Mountain. Drona had been doing this for 9 years now. The other elephants would march behind. One or two would pull tableaux that told stories. There would be dancers, folk singers, and stilt walkers, and the streets would be lined with people who cheered loudly as the procession passed. Balarama wondered when his turn would come to carry the ambari. When Drona became too old, perhaps, Balarama began to dream. He was carrying the ambari, the splendid golden seat on which the Devi was seated, and leading the train of elephants. People lined the streets and shouted, "Jai Shamandeshwari," and pointed at him. "That's Balarama," the commentator was telling everyone. "He carries the ambari. Look at his graceful gait. What a fine elephant he is." Boom! Boom! Balarama's reverie was suddenly broken, and he froze in fright. And then he broke into a run. Sinapa, who was sitting on his back, nearly fell off, and he began to shout, "Balarama, calm down! Stop!" Balarama ran to the far corner of the grounds and finally stopped. He turned round and saw all the other elephants were standing in their place, as if nothing had happened. Only Arjuna had run in the other direction. Balarama allowed himself to be led back to his spot. "Balarama, you will get used to it. It's the cannons being fired in honor of the Devi," Sinapa said. Balarama was shaking like a leaf, and he thought everyone could hear his bones rattle. Sinapa took him back to his stable and fed him bananas and spoke softly until he calmed down. That evening, he was taken to Drona. "Balarama," said Drona, "don't be afraid. You will get used to the cannons. You have to be brave, and you must know the humans are more afraid of us. You will one day take my place and carry the ambari." Balarama nodded. "Uncle Drona, I will do as you do, and learn to be the ambari elephant. But why are we doing this? Why are we not in the forest? Will we never go back? Will we?" he asked. Drona said sadly, "I'm afraid not. We just have to make the best of what we have, don't we?" And he nuzzled Balarama affectionately. Balarama tried harder to get used to the cannon blasts, as the cannons boomed every day. Balarama and Arjuna finally got used to it. 15 days later, the two laughed till their sides ached, remembering their silliness over the cannons. 3 weeks seemed to whiz by, and in no time it was Dasara. The elephants were dressed in finery and grandly caparisoned. People gathered at the grounds to watch the elephants getting ready. This annoyed Balarama a great deal. He could not let down the other elephants, and Sinapa would be in trouble too if he misbehaved. Chapter 12. Jambu Savari. On the grand day of the Vijaya Dashami, Drona was taken away to the palace very early in the morning. Balarama and the others were woken up at dawn, and they were all given a bath. Sinapa brought some men to him, who began painting floral and Rangoli motifs on his trunk, ears, and his forehead. A yellow and purple satin robe was then thrown over him, and a jeweled forehead piece was placed on his head. He looked over at Arjuna and found him dressed in red and green robes, and they were then taken to the palace. In the evening, the elephants were all rounded up. They waited in front of the palace, and important human beings were seated in the palace front yard, and there were hundreds waiting to see these important people offer puja to the Devi, now mounted in the significant golden ambari that Drona was carrying. On the sides there were men in colorful dress standing by the cannons. When the signal was given, all the cannons were fired, and Balarama stood without turning a hair and was very proud. Then Drona began the walk to Banimantap, and the other elephants followed, Balarama and Arjuna bringing up the rear. They finally reached Banimantap, with crowds cheering them all the way. Balarama felt both shy and pleased at all the attention. They were saying people came from all over the world to watch him and his friends. He was on TV, though he wasn't quite sure what that meant. It was a grand evening with fireworks. There was the torchlight parade, and the night sky was lit up as the flaming torches danced to music. It was way past midnight when the elephants finally returned to their stables. The mahouts were very happy, and they patted the elephants, nuzzled them, and told them how proud they were. Balarama swung Sanapa high with his trunk and ruffled his hair playfully. A week later, Balarama returned to Dubare with the others. Balarama was happy to be back home. This was his home now, and he must forget the forest, Mohini, and his friends. But he missed them all, but he tried his best not to. Chapter 13. Balarama and Son. It was a bright day at Dubare. Balarama had just finished sloshing about in the waters and was chewing on a sugar cane. Sanapa and his son, Rajendra, were attending to Balarama. Rajendra was very young, but Sanapa was teaching him to be a mahout. Balarama liked him a lot because he was kind, just like his father. Basavaraju came to join them. He was looking worried. "I have bad news," he began, and Sanapa went over to him. "It's Drona, isn't it?" Sanapa asked. Balarama perked up and listened. "Yes," said Basavaraju. "He is not doing well. He is losing weight, and he gets weaker by the day. He will no longer be able to carry the Ambari. They are retiring him," Basavaraju said. Poor Uncle Drona, Balarama thought. He was very sad. He wondered if Drona would be just like Auntie Ani had all those years ago in the Nagarajole forest. Then he suddenly heard his name being mentioned.
"Do you think Balarama is ready for the Ambari?" Sanapa was asking.
Basavaraju said, "Yes, Balarama is ready, and so is Arjuna. We have to wait and see." Balarama wished they would pick him. The very next morning, Sanapa came to him, and he was skipping joyfully. He said, "Balarama, you are the new Ambari elephant," and he began to dance and laugh. When Sanapa finally calmed down, he said, "Now, Balarama, I want you to promise me you'll make me proud.
I will teach you to be the Ambari elephant. Balarama nodded vigorously, and the bell around his neck pealed merrily, and he went forth following Sinapa to learn his new job. Balarama became the Ambari elephant, and he was known all over the world, and he was shown on television. Everyone cheered him and clapped their hands joyfully when he ambled past them at the head of the procession to Bani Mantap. Balarama had been the Ambari elephant for 10 years now, leading the Jambu Savari every Vijayadashami day. He never understood why he had to do this at all, though. He still had no answer as to why he had been taken from his home in the first place. All he knew was he would never go back to his home in the forest, and he would never roam free. He would never wallow in a mud pit or make baby elephants with Mohini. I guess Mohini must be a patriarch by now. What a fine mother she would have made. Auntie Ani had taught her everything. If only our ancestors had left with the gods and gone to heaven with them, humans would not trap and turn us into circus animals. But Balarama was glad to have Sinapa, and he loved him dearly and would do anything for his mahout. Soon he would retire, and Arjuna would take his place. Drona was really, really old and never went anywhere anymore. And he rarely thought about his home in the forest now. Mohini, too, had become a dim memory. He smiled, thinking about the reason for this. Indira. It was the first year at the head of the Jambu Savari. They had all returned to the camp, and Dasara had been declared a grand success. Balarama had been very popular. Everyone had welcomed him with cheering and clapping, and people were throwing flowers at him. Well, not at him, literally. It was for the Devi, who sat in the grandest golden Ambari, which he was carrying, walking gracefully and majestically all the way to Bani Mantap. The streets were lined with thousands of humans, and they couldn't take their eyes off of him and the other elephants in the procession. What a day it had been! Balarama had returned to the royal stables at midnight, and everyone had been so happy, happy as elephants in a city can be, that is. A week later, they came home to camp at Dubare. Drona had not left camp this time. He was too ill to be moved. Poor Uncle Drona, Balarama thought. Drona had barely opened his eyes when Balarama went to tell him about the Dasara procession. But Drona died a few days later, and all the elephants had wept. The mahouts, too, had been very sad. Basavarashu was inconsolable. Sinapa and Anaya did their very best to cheer him up. A few days later, when everyone had just stopped grieving for Drona, Sinapa walked up to Balarama and said, "Bala, here, I want you to meet someone. Now be nice." Balarama turned, smiling happily, for he was always glad to see Sinapa. "What are you smiling about?" asked a sweet voice, and Balarama jumped out of his skin. He turned round and his "Hello!" froze in his throat at the vision before him. "I'm Indira," said the prettiest she-elephant Balarama had ever set eyes on. "Balarama," he stuttered in great excitement, as Indira's mahout nudged her forward, and before they knew it, they were locking trunks and trumpeting joyously. "You naughty fellow," teased Sinapa, laughing at Balarama, who wasn't paying him any attention at all. 10 years! It had been 10 years since Indira had walked into his life and made him the happiest elephant in the whole world. They played together and romped about in the camp together. Indira's mahout was Venkatesha, a young man who was learning from Sinapa. 2 years later, Balarama and Indira became parents. The adorable little fellow was named Krishna. Everyone at Dubare fell in love with baby Krishna instantly. He was the first baby elephant to be born there in 50 years, and he soon became a spoiled little brat, for the elephants and the mahouts vied with each other to give him little treats and cuddle him. Every year, when Dasara came, Indira stayed behind while he and the other tuskers went off to Mysore, and he missed her greatly. He missed baby Krishna, too. Sometimes Balarama would become sad because he knew Krishna would never roam free in the jungle. He would grow up and become the Ambari elephant just like his appa. It was never going to stop. He told Krishna the story of Airavata, and when he heard the story of Ganesha, Krishna had been so excited, just like Balarama all those years ago. He had sobbed loudly when he heard how Auntie Ani had died. But when he told him about Nagarhole and the Kabini, he was puzzled. "What is a tiger? Can you show me?" he asked. Indira would pull him close and wind her trunk tight around him, as she, too, did not understand why Krishna would never see the jungle. "Why did it have to be this way? Why does it have to be this way, Appa?" young Rajendra asked Sanapa one day. Why do we take these gentle giants from their home in the jungle?" Rajendra often went into the forest with the forest guards. Then he'd love to hide and quietly watch the tigers, elephants, and the dhole. The elephants marching across the jungle and through the Kabini was a spectacular sight. Peacocks danced, the kohl and the nilakanta flitted from tree to tree fearlessly, and the crane and osprey posed prettily on the waters. The forest was like heaven. The birds and the beasts here had nothing to fear, except the humans. "That's the way it's been, Rajendra," said Sanapa sadly. "It started 450 years ago. The Mysore Maharaja wanted a Narahaba, a festival for all the people to enjoy, and he chose Dasara, the festival of 9 nights of the Devi. The Devi, you know, killed Mahishasura after a battle that lasted 9 nights. All the palace elephants were brought from their stables, and they were grandly decorated on Vijayadashami, and they all went in procession to Bani Mantap. The king sat in the golden howdah, which was called Ambari, which was mounted on the best elephant. And now we have no king, so the Devi's idol sits in the Ambari. One day, it may all come to an end. The government might decide to let the elephants go back to the forest." Sanapa paused. Speaking slowly, he said, "Or there may be no more elephants left in the jungle for us to trap. A world without elephants?" Rajendra was very angry. He went over to baby Krishna and hugged him tightly. He wished he could run away to the jungle. He would take Krishna and leave him there, he said to Sanapa. "No, son," Sanapa said quickly. "Come here, sit by me. We can't do that. When I was young like you, I too wanted to take Devendra away from here. I had reached the Hemavati and was wondering how to cross. But your Tata Ramapa caught up with me and brought us right back. I was very scared. I thought he'd be very angry with me. But Tata was not angry at all. He sat me down and told me this wouldn't help Devendra. Devendra, you see, had become a city elephant. He would be very confused and scared in the jungle. Other elephants might fight him, and he might die. So you see, Rajendra, Krishna is just a baby. He needs his mother. He needs us. We must do the best we can with what we have. Let's just love Krishna, Balarama, Indira, Arjuna, and be kind to them. It's time now to say goodbye to Balarama and his friends. Perhaps you will meet them all one day if you happen to visit the Mysore Dasara. Now that you know the story of Balarama's life in the jungle, you will think kindly of him and hope that there will always be elephants in the forest, won't you? Now everyone knows the story of Balarama, the Dasara elephant. Wouldn't you like to meet him one day and say, "Hey, Balarama, I know all about you, and I love you."
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. And in fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative.
Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods and Four Seasons Resort invite you to sponsor a legacy tree and contribute to the biodiversity of Hawaii. Legacy trees can honor an individual, commemorate an event, or memorialize a loved one. Every tree dedication is a living legacy and a gift which grows grander year after year. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now.